Hey everybody, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're using. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe tonight. It's Thursday night at 8:30 in New England. Dave, I know you're a little bit south of me, but I can tell you it's already getting darker earlier up here in New England.
It is getting darker earlier down here, too, which is a good thing because, you know, we need the cool here. Today it was about 92, 93 degrees, so it's still really hot down here in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I could use some cooler weather. Not that I'm hoping for winter, but...
Yeah, it's starting to cool off a little bit up here too. Actually, the last day or two, it's been kind of rainy and just really sweaty.
Yeah,
just really, really humid. But it's
when we talked last week, it was in the 50s up there.
Yeah, it's warmed back up a bit, but it's now kind of, you know, instead of 85 or 90, it's 75 or 80, and yeah, so it's coming.
we're still in the 90s and, you know, 110% humidity. So
yeah. So we hit a bit of a milestone this last week.
Did.
We had our 20,000th download, which is just mind blowing to me.
Never in a million years did we think that this was.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Thank you guys.
Thank you everybody for tuning in from seemingly all corners of the globe. That's super cool. And then you and I started the Not One More Vet Race around the world.
Yes. And I was alerted to this by one of our past guests, Vet Tech Kelsey. She posted that she was going to be walking it. And I said, oh, this is something that is going to get me back into running. I've been missing my running. And getting back into this and supporting Not One More Vet is going to be a great thing.
Yeah.
So we've set some lofty goals for ourselves. I set a pretty high donation amount that I was hoping for. The very beginning, it kind of really trickled in, and now it's kind of slowed down. So I'm asking for support. This is my shameless plug for supporting me. And my goal, I know you changed your goal. My goal is 125 miles.
Yeah.
And the race goes from September 1st, which was a couple days ago, and it ends on November 10th. And my goal is to get 125 miles done in those, what is that, 7 weeks? I think it's about 7 weeks.
Yeah.
And you're gonna bike it, right?
Yeah, I'm cycling, and that's pretty cool because I'm not anymore. Am I a runner? So, but Molly and I have gotten into biking, so that's a little bit more my speed. And
yeah,
I think I set my goal only at 100 miles, which as I was thinking about it today as I was riding, that if you run 125 miles, I should be able to bike quite a bit farther than that.
You should just be able
because
to do,
it's you know going so much faster and frankly a lot less output. But the other thing that I noticed is as long as you have it linked up to like I have it, because I have an iPhone, I have it linked up to my health app, it records my steps at work as mileage.
Oh.
So I've already run, quote unquote, because of just walking at work, like an additional 2 or 3 miles just from my shifts this week. So that's also kind of neat.
Well, you need to up your goals then.
For sure. I'll be editing that as we go. But yeah. Anyway, so we have a team going. We have a couple of your old coworkers and our fantasy football league friends and joined us. And so we'll post a link to that. Please check it out and donate. It's a really really cool thing that they're doing, and especially with this being September now and National Suicide Prevention Month, or National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, I think it is, which is something else we're going to be posting a lot this month. Of course, a really, really ever-prevalent topic in our field. So, you know, just
I feel like there's not ever an episode that we shouldn't be talking about that.
For a lot of people, it is something that's always there. And if not, I mean, even if not suicide, mental health, for sure.
Yeah.
So,
definitely, yeah.
So anyway, so a couple of things that we got going on we're pretty stoked of. So keep an eye out for that. We'll post some links and we'll occasionally do some live stuff with our progress and have a little fun with it. So
Well, and we also have coming up on Monday is the birth of the Vet Tech Cafe. Remember that night?
Yes, yes.
So we're going to do an Instagram Live for that. So that should be fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we going to stay up that late?
Well, I mean, I for sure will be, but...
You
have early mornings with school, yeah. But we'll be doing a little bit of an Instagram Live for a few minutes on Monday night because that's the 1 year anniversary of it kind of coming to be at IVEX last year, which is sad that we can't go there this year, but we'll still be doing that Zoom recording during IVEX, so that'll be fun.
Yep. And we decided that was going to be on a Sunday night.
Sunday night. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. So we'll post about all that kind of
stuff.
A couple
live events coming up, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah. So what do you think? You had a cup of coffee? You ready to get started?
I do. You know what I'm drinking. What terrible thing are you drinking
actually
tonight,
Jeff? Tonight I just went for a breakfast blend, but okay. I did order online today a couple of fall flavors for the cafe that I'll be having few interviews. So.
Is fall flavors code for pumpkin spice?
Well, that was one of them, but I also got one was like autumn spice. One was, the other two that I got, I know you're going to love. I got bourbon pecan pie.
All right, I like it.
Picked up a bag of that. And then the other was maple bourbon barrel.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm super
excited. I'm not sure how I feel about the maple.
Oh, I love maple.
But at least it's breakfast.
So I should have those hopefully in a couple of weeks, and then you can tease me about some of those flavors too.
And mock you for them, yes.
Yeah. But anyway, let's go ahead and bring out our guest. So tonight we have Tasha McNerney coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. Super excited. She is a CVT and a VTS in anesthesia and also a certified veterinary pain practitioner, which is through IVAPM, the International Veterinary Academy for Pain Management. She's a creator of the Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds Facebook group, which now has over 50,000 members around the world, which is just amazing and such a great community that is in that page. And they discuss, of course, if you're not familiar, check it out, but all things anesthesia, pain management, different drugs, protocols, equipment, all kinds of just really eye-opening things. And then also started her own podcast, the Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds
podcast.
She's
a fellow podcaster now.
Yeah, and well, remember, she was on our collaboration episode.
Oh, that's right,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So wherever you get your podcasts, check out the Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds podcast. She's had some great guests, and of course is also a speaker at all conferences, you know, anything related to anesthesia and analgesia, and numerous articles and book chapters. And her hobbies include unrealistic home renovation, which sounds like she's going through a bit now. And pugs. Yes, of course, pugs being the anesthesia tech. So Tasha, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. What kind of coffee can we get you tonight?
Oh man. Well, it's 8:30 and most people would probably shy away from caffeine, but I'm like one of those rare people that could still drink an espresso and go to bed, no problem.
Me too.
So I'm gonna go with maybe a latte.
All right.
I'm kind of a snob about my coffee.
Okay. Okay.
Me too, apparently. Jeff will just drink anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I cringed hearing the maple bourbon. I can't do the flavors. Mm. I need, like, I'm a purist. Cafe Bustelo.
Okay.
All right.
The best espresso, the best coffee.
We'll have to add that to our list.
Yeah,
we've got a whole list of
it's so good. So growing up in Miami, Florida, that was kind of the coffee of choice that everyone and their grandmother drank. And I just got used to it. And to me, it kind of tastes like growing up, which I guess is strange, you know, because maybe you shouldn't give your children coffee. But again, that just contributed to my personality.
You know, they always said like caffeine stunted growth, and I started drinking coffee earlier, and I still ended up 6'6". So I don't know if there's anything to that. But I just have breakfast blend tonight, the Starbucks breakfast blend. I didn't go with anything fancy tonight, so just a regular... regular cup of coffee. So we kind of always start out with how we got to where we are. So kind of take us through your career path from what kind of got you into veterinary medicine and some of the twists and turns along the way to where you are now and every stop along the way, and we'll kind of jump off from there.
Yeah. Wow. So it's a long, convoluted story
They all seem to be that way.
Yeah.
It is funny listening to everybody else's stories on this. Very rarely, I feel like, do people just say, like, yep, I'm going to be a vet tech.
They
stumble into it or they hear about it and they're like, what's a vet tech? Oh, now let me go check it out, which is exactly what happened to me. I wanted to be a journalist. I was going to, of course, I was going to live in New York City and be a journalist and write for Rolling Stone or something like that, or Spin Magazine, again, because it was like 1999. And, and I was like, I'm going to go write for a magazine and live in the city and it's going to be great. And I started school. I went to Michigan State University. Go Spartans. And I started my journalism classes, and I hated it. Ugh, it was so boring. Just reading copy, writing copy, editing, all the like days and nights spent in the editing room. And, you know, it just wasn't for me. It wasn't sparking my interest at all. Even when I was writing about things that I liked, you know, I actually had a restaurant review column in college. So you'd think that like, I'm actually getting asked to like go to random restaurants and review them as a college student. And I still found it really boring.
Doing that wasn't boring, but writing about it probably was.
Yeah,
boring.
It was like the writing about it. And I'm like, okay, how do I describe this taco salad in 47 words and make it sound interesting? So I got really great at adjectives. So when I write up a soap, it's very detailed. But I noticed that on my report cards, actually, I was not doing well in my journalism classes because I just wasn't interested. Interestingly enough, in my prerequisites, you know, you have to take biology, you have to take these other classes. And I was 4.0-ing those. I was really interested in biology. I took genetics class. I took comparative anatomy, invertebrate anatomy. I basically took all of the anatomies that Michigan State offered because I was so fascinated. And my anatomy teacher was the one, my comparative anatomy teacher, shout out to Professor Hill. She was the one who really was like, hey, you're really good at this. You know, do you want to be a TA for me? And I thought about it. And then the more I talked to her, I decided to switch majors. And I ended up getting my degree in wildlife biology. And I really wanted to go into wildlife biometrics. So basically like biology meets statistics.
Okay.
Which I found very fascinating. Got an internship right after college at the Florida Keys Wild Bird Center. Mm-hmm. Again, I grew up in Miami. My family still has a house in Isla Mirada, so I get it. I sound like a really spoiled brat. Like, yeah, I didn't appreciate it when I was 13 and my parents were like, we're going to go to our Florida Keys house for the weekend. I was like, oh, I don't want to go to the Keys. I want to go to the mall. looking back, I'm like, oh. I was a jerk.
But if only we had the options to go places like that now.
Right.
Yeah, I know. So I really did have a pretty great, you know, childhood growing up in the Florida Keys. So I went to my family home and I stayed there and worked in the Florida Keys at the Florida Keys Wild Bird Center for like a year. And I worked in their hospital. So at the Florida Keys Wild Bird Center, they do wildlife rehab. They do mainly with shorebirds. And I really loved it. I loved the medicine part of it. I remember like running fluoroscopy on pelicans that had swallowed fish hooks, and we were setting broken legs on osprey and fixing flamingos and all these kind of things. And I loved it. And I started talking to the director of the bird center, and I said, like, I don't really know where to go from here. I don't know, like, if I want to go further and get a master's in biology. I don't know really what that would serve me. And we had an intern come into the bird center, and she was a veterinary technician student. She was doing her internship, and then her and I got talking, and she said, "What, have you ever thought about becoming a vet tech?" And of course, like everyone else, I said,
What's
a vet tech? I don't even know what that is. I thought you'd just be a veterinarian. And honestly, I thought about applying to vet school for a little bit, but you know, when you're like 20 years old and you've just got out of college, like the last thing I wanted to do was go back to Michigan State.
yeah, right?
Like the last thing I wanted to do was be like, yep, I'm going to sign myself up for 5 more years of school. And I didn't want to do that. So I found a program that was local. And I signed up for it, and that was in Michigan State. I was going to go to Michigan State's veterinary technology school. So I got all signed up. I'm about to leave the Florida Keys. And then what happens in traditional, you know, silly girl fashion? I met a boy. I met a boy while I was in the Florida Keys. Now, granted, I only had 2 more weeks left in the Florida Keys before I'm going back to Michigan.
Of course.
I meet this boy. I mean, we hit it off. Summer love, blah, blah, blah. He says, why don't you move to Philly with me? And I said, yeah, all right. Sounds good. my parents were not thrilled, considering I had only known him for about 10 days before agreeing to move to Philly. Oh, wow. With him. So moved to Philly, got enrolled in a veterinary technology program here. I ended up graduating from Manor College here in PA, and I took a job at a small animal hospital. And I ended up working at that small animal hospital for 15 years. So I worked there while I was going to school, and then I worked there up in, you know, I worked there while I got my CVPP. I worked there while I got my VTS. And they were really supportive of me. The hospital owner was really interesting in that he really wanted his technicians to be utilized to the fullest extent. Now, this was a pretty big hospital. We had 13 doctors. Wow. And we had a lot of staff. But he really wanted everybody to find their niche. Like, whatever you're interested in, he wanted to pursue it. So when I said, I'm interested in anesthesia, he started sending me to anesthesia conferences. He started sending me to IVACs. He said, I want you to get as much anesthesia. I want you to be the point person for anesthesia. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you guys know Vicky Byard, who is a CBT and a VTS in dentistry. But she worked at the same hospital. And the reason that she got so involved in dentistry is because he kind of did the same thing for her 10 years prior.
Wow.
And he really found people who, you know, whatever you really were into, and he wanted to facilitate that as much as possible. He didn't want you to just come in, work your shift, and go home. He wanted you to be invested in the outcomes and invested, and you really were a part of the team. I mean,
that's
amazing. For a technician, I mean, I was a part of the rounding of patients. I was involved with making medical decisions with the doctors. We all talked about it together. So it wasn't just a, here's my orders, you follow them. It was, hey, Tasha, I know you just went to that lecture at IVX on, you know, dopamine versus dobutamine. What are they saying? How can we get better? And I think that that's the reason I stayed there for so long, was because you really felt like, wow, I am a part of this team. My input is important. I'm being utilized. And that's the best feeling in the world. During
Real quick.
Yeah.
Thinking of a practice like that, where the owner or the head veterinarian or what have you is so involved in making you find your passion and making you go to those conferences and allowing you to do all that stuff and be so involved in everything. What was the turnover rate there? Because, you know, turnover is a huge problem right now in the field. And I bet there's not a lot of practices that encourage technicians to grow like that. What was your experience with turnover? Did you have a lot of turnover, or did people like you stay there for 15 years?
Yeah, people stayed there for a long time. I mean, Vicky Byard stayed there for a total of 28 years.
Oh my God.
I stayed there for 15 years. I have a friend who's still working there, and she started at the same time I am, so she must be there now 17 years.
Wow.
So yeah, people stayed because they feel like their voices were being heard. So, you know, definitely shout out to Mark Fox, who's the owner of Rao Animal Hospital, for kind of, you know, really getting me started in anesthesia.
That's great.
Very cool.
While I was at Rao, I got my VTS, I got my CVPP, I started doing speaking, I started writing articles, and I love Rao completely. But Rao is a general practice, you know, and with my VTS, you know, I wanted to be doing thoracotomies. I want that, like, juicy septic abdomen that's trying to go to the light. Like, those are the cases I want to be involved in anesthetically. So I got the opportunity to start at a new hospital that was opening in New Jersey. And it's a huge hospital. I think there are 40-some doctors right now.
Oh,
it's
goodness.
A specialty and emergency hospital. And we have two criticalists. We have three surgeons, neurologists, you know, ophthalmologists. All of the things.
All the specialties,
and
yeah.
All the specialties. And so I get to do a lot of really interesting, fun anesthesia.
Awesome. Awesome. I think you might have actually just hired, or a criticalist that did his residency at Tufts might have just started there. Clayton Greenway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love Clayton.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Just working with him today.
He's a good egg. He's, yeah. Yeah, he's awesome.
Thinking back on your career, what's one thing that you really love about it? And what's one thing that you would change? Is there something, it sounds like you had a pretty great path to get where you are. Is there anything that you would change about what you did?
Yeah. Oh, well, definitely there's stuff that I would change, right? Everybody, like, you know, I would say that, in all honesty, if I could go back and, like, tell, you know, high school graduate Tasha something, it would be just go to vet tech school right out of high school. Don't bother getting yourself $60,000 in debt with a bachelor's that you're not going to use. You know, granted, I needed that time to figure out what I wanted to do, and because I really, you know, journalism and then this. And so I did need that time, and I had a great time at Michigan State. But in the long run, looking at it just from a career perspective, certainly from a financial perspective, I didn't really need to have a bachelor's. So that's probably the advice I would have given myself at the time.
But wouldn't you think that the all that training in writing and editing and all that stuff has helped you with, you know, writing articles and writing lectures and things like that? Do you feel like that's helped out at all? Or?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
But interestingly enough, though, even though I've had all that training, I am definitely not a grammar nerd at all. I am not a, like, honestly, if you miss a comma, I don't get jammed up about it. I just don't. Like, I get what you're trying to say, so I don't try to overanalyze and over-edit things anymore. I used to, but I get it now.
Ain't no time for that.
Yeah, I'm old now.
So you mentioned there, of course, the VTS, and it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's VTS anesthesia or anesthesia analgesia. What exactly is the designation?
Yes. So it used to be VTS anesthesia, and then they changed it a couple years ago, and it is now considered, you have your VTS, it's like VTS A&A,
okay,
anesthesia
okay.
and analgesia.
I thought that was the case. Okay. So can you talk to us a little bit about just what that process looks like? And I guess one question I would have, I didn't realize you did that at the GP you were at. How difficult was that to do while you were in GP to get those kind of, you know, cases probably that you need for that?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that because it was extremely difficult and I was not able to do it at a GP.
Ah, okay.
So here's what I had to do. They do recommend that you work with a specialist, either a boarded doctor or another VTS.
Okay.
So granted, I worked with Vicky Byard, who's a VTS in dentistry, but I didn't work with anyone who was like a boarded criticalist or a surgeon or another VTS in anesthesia. So I submitted, but I didn't get approved. And looking back, you know, I was upset at the time, but looking back, it makes sense. I was at a GP. I wasn't doing lung lobectomies, you know, every week. I wasn't doing these super critical cases. So it makes sense. So what I ended up doing was working my regular hours at my GP. And then one day a week, I went and worked with a boarded surgeon and a boarded anesthesiologist. And during that year, that's when I submitted everything and just basically worked my ass off for that entire year because I was working so much to try to get as many cases as possible.
Okay. Okay. And do you find that you have, it sounds like at the clinic you were at, you had a really good rapport with the doctors that you worked with and it was a really collaborative effort. I can imagine the anesthesia and analgesia VTS being really difficult to, because now you're actually advocating for certain drugs or for certain protocols or different things. Do you have a hard time kind of getting that through to some of the doctors that you work with and saying like, I really think we should use this drug or use this protocol in this patient? Or do you find that they're pretty receptive so far?
Yeah, it's definitely back and forth, right? It varies. Certainly, there are times that you know ego is coming into it, and you have to just say, "Okay, that's fine. You know, do what you feel is best, doc. And I'll do another case at some other time."
Gotcha.
But most of the time, the doctors and that I were working with were very receptive. You know, they knew that's what I was specializing in. That's what I was dedicating my life to. I was eating, sleeping, like breathing anesthesia. I was reading it all the time, staying up until midnight, reading the latest studies, you know, Lum and Jones. I mean, I still have my Lum and Jones around with me all the time, like that, you know, the anesthesia Bible. Mm-hmm. And they were I think they were great. Now, again, I worked at a like unicorn clinic at the time.
Right.
And the one day a week I worked with the anesthesiologist, she really was trying to facilitate me becoming a VTS. So that was on my side. I think that when people come up to me at conferences and they say, hey, I want to get my VTS and here's the situation, if your specialist don't have time to help you with this, it's going to be hard. You need somebody who's going to be your mentor. You need somebody who's going to look over your cases, give you advice, review your case reports, look over all your stuff, but also help you to make sure you're put on for those cases, right?
Yeah.
If you're at a GP, I know it sounds disappointing, but even if you're doing anesthesia every single day on all of those spay, neuters, and dentistries, it's not ASA 3 and 4 cases. It's not really critical cases. So you're going to have a hard time getting approved.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, I mean, like you said, it's tough, but for good reason. Like, you have to gain that experience with those cases at some point. Like, you know, you just don't get the volume of them in that kind of setting.
Yes.
Tasha, let's talk a little bit about CVPP and IVAPM. I know we use a lot of, I always tell my students that the veterinary world is full of acronyms and oftentimes we don't understand them. So what does CVPP stand for and what does IVAPM stand for?
All right. So a CVPP is a Certified Veterinary Pain Practitioner. And okay. is a designation given out by the IVAPM, which is the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management. So this is a group of veterinary pain management professionals that have come together, and they have a bunch of resources on their website. So I highly recommend anybody go to their website. Interestingly enough, we are in September, and September is mm-hmm. officially designated as Animal Pain Awareness Month.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So I will say
that too.
Yeah. One of the really cool things that I've done in my career, and I've done some cool stuff. One of them, again, being anesthesia nerds, because I'm really proud of that. But also, I was at work one day, and Vicky Byard, again, VTS in dentistry, was going on about Pet Dental Month. And everybody knows Pet Dental Month, right?
Yeah.
You guys know what when mm-hmm. Pet Dental yep. Month is?
I used to.
Yeah, I used to when I did dentals.
Yeah.
Okay.
February?
Yes.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah. So Pet Dental Month is February. So she's going on about Pet Dental Month and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nobody cares about Pet Dental Month. We're going to have I'm going to have my own month. It's going to be Pain Management Month. And
wait, did you start that?
So I legit light bulb. And I said, nice. Wait a minute. Why don't we have Animal Pain Awareness Month? Like, why don't we have a month? So at the time, I was a member of the IVAPM, but I wasn't yet a board member, which I am now. So I just emailed the board, and I said, hey, here's the deal. We're just going to start. We're just going to do it. Because at first, we were like, should we see if we can get approval from the AVMA and get it be an official title? And my personality is, as evidenced by my move to Philadelphia, jump first, worry about the net later.
Ask questions later.
Right. So I said, no, here's the thing. I'm just going to start telling everybody it's Animal Pain Awareness Month and you guys do the same thing. And they were like, yeah, all right, let's do it. And, you know, now if you look on the calendar that's put out by AVMA, it that's is awesome. Official. We are IVAPM. Animal Pain Awareness Month is September. It's all over. It's international. I'm really, really proud of that.
You should be. That is incredible.
So I'm, you know, hoping that when, you know, tech students are learning about stuff years from now, they can say, yeah, February is Animal Dental Month, but guess what? September is Animal Pain Awareness Month, and here are all these things that we could be doing for our pets.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
For the IVAPM, again, you can become a CVPP, and that is similar to becoming a VTS, where it is usually about a 2-year process where, you know, you have a mentor. The nice thing is that it's available to any animal or veterinary health professionals as long as they've had 5 years working in full-time practice and at least 2 years of clinical experience working with animals in pain. So these can be people who already are working in rehab. It's open to veterinarians. It's open to technicians. And at the time of testing, you take the same test as a veterinarian takes. Interestingly enough, when I took my test, sitting next to me was a boarded anesthesiologist.
Oh, wow.
We were taking the same test.
Not intimidating at all.
No, I was like, oh, gosh, this is going to be horrible. It's the same thing as far as you have to do pain management related CE. You have to you check off a pain management skills list. There's the written exam. You submit case reports, and you have to get letters of recommendation from people who can say yes, she's been involved with pain management cases. The reason that I really like the CVPP, or for people who are really interested in pain management, yes, the VTS in anesthesia is going to encompass some pain management stuff. But most of the stuff, again, is involved with anesthesia. So we're talking about acute pain. And we know that acute pain is managed much differently than chronic pain. And that's the thing I really liked about becoming a CVPP is there's so much information on how we're managing chronic pain, especially like chronic pain in cats and dogs with OA and all of the different treatment modalities out there. So I feel like for me, having both of those requirements, I really can look at a case and say, yes, here's what we're going to do for you in the acute term, you know, acute term for if we're doing a TPLO, but in order to prevent you from developing chronic pain, here's the way we're going to treat your postoperative pain requirements and maybe your rehabilitation requirements to make sure that we encompass, again, both the acute and chronic pain of those patients.
Wow. Wow. Was there like a case or like a patient anywhere along the line that was maybe dealing with chronic pain or acute pain that kind of made you think like, man, this is something I really enjoy, like figuring this out and working on this? Or did it just kind of come, you know, over a period of time in your career?
All right. Very much in all honesty, it came about because I was at IVEX, and I had just the year before I had submitted my VTS and I didn't get in, and I was really frustrated. Right. But again, I worked at a GP, but I was really frustrated, and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Should I just give up? Should I go do something else? And I was sitting at the time with Nancy Shaffron.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys don't know Nancy Shaffron, she is like the godmother as far as pain management goes. Even though she's a VTS ECC, you know, so much of her lecturing was on pain management.
Right.
And
oh, yeah.
She,
right.
You know, her and I, we live relatively near each other. She brought her dog to Rao, where I worked. She always had me do the anesthesia. And she just said to me, you know, listen, don't worry about the anesthesia thing. You can get your pain, your CVPP right where you are. And I was like, well, what's the CVPP? Let me look more into that, right? You know, so I was like, well, what is that? I didn't know. And when I started looking into it, I was like, wow, this is really cool. At the time, my animal hospital, Rao, the GP, we also employed a rehabilitation specialist. Like, a side wing of the hospital was rehab. We already had an underwater treadmill. We were doing the, you know, passive range of motion. We were doing the massage. We were doing the low-level laser. We were doing all of these. Or she was doing all of these things. So I actually just spent some time with her and got to know some of these pain management techniques. And we also, one day a week, had an acupuncturist coming in to Rao.
Hmm.
So I got exposed to that as well. So again, it was just really cool to see these longer term pain modalities, but also for some of them, like, you know, the massage techniques and the underwater treadmill, et cetera, non-drug related techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So,
gotcha.
Which came to be really cool when we, you know, a couple of years back when we had when it was really hard to get opioids.
Oh, yeah.
It was really interesting to think outside the box, like, hey, for post-operative pain management, if I don't have fentanyl and I can't keep this patient on a fentanyl CRI, what are some multimodal ways I can, you know, manage this patient's pain if I don't have opioids at my ready?
Right. Mm.
I guess one question that I would have, and I guess I'm still a little bit confused, what is the difference between a CVPP and a VTS?
So the VTS is a veterinary technician specialist,
right?
So that's open to only veterinary technicians. The CVPP is a certified veterinary pain practitioner. So it's really open to either technicians, again, or nurses, whichever country you're in, or doctors.
Got it.
So a doctor could be a CVPP, a technician could be a CVPP, etc.
Is the process any different?
No, the process is pretty much the same.
Yeah,
if you want to become a CVPP, just like a VTS, you have to complete an application, a letter of recommendation, you have to do case reports, you have to do pain management related CE, you have to have someone verify your pain management skills via a checklist, and then you have to take a written exam.
Hmm. Yeah, after, you know, Dave and I did our VTS and ECC the same year, and about a year or so after that, I felt like I needed something else, like I needed a new challenge. And I remember April Bays and I were both super interested in getting our CVPPs through IVAPM, and we joined IVAPM, and I was just working at an overnight weekend holiday ER, and I didn't really know anybody in the rehab realm, and so it wasn't an option that I could figure out how to make work at the time. But what I will say came out of that was the journal that comes with IVAPM membership I still get, and that journal, I mean, it's up there with JVAC. I mean, it is awesome. And
it is.
If nothing else, for anybody listening, you know, even if you don't want to go down the path and get your CVPP, you can join IVAPM and get an amazing anesthesia and analgesia journal as well. There's some really, really great stuff in there. So we'll kind of pivot over towards veterinary anesthesia nerds. So first, before we get to like what all goes on in there, how did that come to be? Like what made you want to start this group and start talking about all this stuff?
I did it as like many other things, just very selfishly, because I was on maternity leave, and interestingly enough, 10 days after giving birth, I gave my very first ever major conference lecture on anesthesia.
Wow.
So, which I don't recommend. in hindsight, you know, when I signed up, I was like, yeah, it'll be no problem. It'll be after the baby. It's like, totally cool. And of course, I was like a mess and not sleeping and had to give this presentation. So I was in Oliver, who's my son now, he's 8. I was in his room. I was putting him to bed, and I knew that I had to work on my presentation, and I had a question that I was like, you know what? I wish I could talk to somebody. I wish I could talk to an anesthesiologist, like just right now, and like just ask a question and see if somebody would answer me. I think it was just about like the receptors as far as like, you know, if fentanyl has any effect on kappa receptor. It was something, you know, random like that, that you,
something
of course,
nerdy.
You're thinking of. Yeah, of course, that you're thinking of at 11 p.m.
Right.
On a Tuesday night. And so I was like, gosh, I wish I could just like group message people that I know that are all in anesthesia. And then I thought, well, Facebook has these groups now. It was like a brand new thing, right? Facebook like first had groups. And I said, well, why don't I just make a group of like the 5 people I know in anesthesia? And it was like Brenda Feller, Jamie Gaynor, Nancy Shafron, you know, like the big names at the time that I was friends on Facebook with. And so I just thought, I'm making this group and I'll just put this question out there. And if they answer it, great. Well, a couple people were like, hey, this group is a good idea. Can I invite a friend? Can I invite a friend? And people were inviting friends and people were joining. And eventually I had 12,000 members. And the thing about having a Facebook group with 12,000 members, like while it was great, again, at the time I was working a full-time job. I'm trying to like get my name out there as far as lecturing. And I just don't have time to personally look through every question and answer every question. And also, you know, like Facebook groups, I don't have time to police all of the comments to make sure that people are being civil and not being jerks to each other and not like bullying online. And it just became a job, you know. I put my son to bed at 9 p.m. and then take a shower. And then from 10 p.m. to midnight, I was on Anesthesia Nerds, answering questions, editing, checking things, putting up my own questions. And I just realized that I couldn't keep doing it. It was not sustainable. But I didn't want to just shut it down.
Sure.
And so I had made friends with Darcy Palmer, who's also a VTS in anesthesia, and Steven Sital, who's, I mean, a VTS in everything at this point.
Might as well be.
So I made friends with them, and they were really into it. They posted a lot on the page and answered a lot of questions. And so I just reached out and I said, would you guys consider becoming like co-administrators with me? Because I just need help answering these questions. I need help policing things. And they said yes, even though it was like completely a big time suck and they're not going to get paid in any way. But they did it, and they're still my co-administrators, and they are fantastic. And not only are they co-administrators, but now they're co-conference planners with me, because we have our own conference every year, and they help to keep the page, you know, relevant and fresh with the newest information. And I can't say enough like how grateful I am that they agreed to be a part of it.
Yeah. All just because you had a question about receptors for fentanyl.
Yes.
And now look at it. It's what is it? 50,000?
Over 50,000.
Yeah. We're over 50,000 now. Goodness. Yeah.
Over 50,000 times. Can my friend join?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
I was just going to ask about the Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds Conference. Yeah. I know, of course, 2020 sucks and
it's just
canceled. But talk a little bit about that, because this was going to be your third year of doing that. Is that right?
This is going to be our fourth year.
This is going to be the fourth year. Okay. And just, describe that a little bit and like what you guys do there and like, you know, what it's all about.
Again, this came about very selfishly, where I was going to IVEX every year, right? And everybody, I love IVEX. Listen, I love IVEX. But I was at a point where with a very young newborn baby, I was like, listen, I can't be away from home for 4 to 5 days. And I need something where I can just go get all anesthesia and pain management and like, just do 2 days of nothing but anesthesia pain management. That's what I want. And I kind of threw it out there to Stephen and Darcy, and they were like, well, what if we just did that? Like, what if we just started our conference and see if we can get sponsors and see if anybody else is interested in also having 2 days of nothing but anesthesia pain management? And we reached out and threw some stuff out there, and we had our first CE weekend in 2016, and it was great. And we keep the attendance really small because we don't want it to feel like you're in a huge lecture hall and you can't ask a question. That's what we want out of Anesthesia Nerds, is that we limit it to like 150 people. So you can stop and ask a question, and we always have a happy hour after the first day so that you can mingle and have a beer with the anesthesiologist that just gave the lecture. So instead of waiting in line after the lecture and trying to rush to your next, you know, class or lab to get your question answered, we're just all sitting around. We're all having a happy hour. We're talking about receptors for fun. And we always invite two anesthesiologists to speak over the weekend, and we invite two VTS in anesthesia, and we do nothing but talk about anesthesia pain management. We also have an optional third day, which is a wet lab, which is all regional anesthesia techniques. So we teach people epidurals. We teach people of the nerve blocks that you would do for dentistry. We teach sacrococcygeal blocks. We teach ultrasound-guided femoral and sciatic blocks. So we have a whole day that's optional third day if you want to get hands-on with some regional anesthesia techniques.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
That's so cool.
And do you use live animals for those labs?
No, we do not use live animals.
Okay, understood. And now you have the Vet Anesthesia Nerd podcast, and Jeff and I could probably talk to you off mic for hours about everything that's involved in making a podcast, but I don't think our listeners really want to hear that. So tell us a little bit about that. Again, did that come out of selfish means? And what kind of discussions do you have? We want to kind of promote your podcast and our podcast so we can expand
great.
Your audience.
Again, it's all anesthesia and pain management based. Yeah. And what we do is every week we have a different guest on who is a specialist in their field. And so we don't just do anesthesiologists. I've had quite a few anesthesiologists on, but I've also had boarded surgeons. I've also had some VTS ECC guests, so we can talk about some critical care anesthesia cases. And so it's a case-based podcast where we say, how would you treat that? Like, you know, one of my favorite episodes was with Dr. Christopher Norkis, who is, just has a million letters after his name.
Yeah, he does.
Because not only was he a VTS in ECC and then went and got a VTS in anesthesia, then he decided to go to vet school.
Right.
And not only go to vet school, then he decided to get boarded in emergency and critical care, and then he decided to get boarded in anesthesia. So he's a double specialist. But
he's a quadruple specialist, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, two times two.
Yeah.
Just too many letters.
Yeah.
And he did a episode for us on block cats. And, you know, I think for me, block cats is one of those things that I love to treat because they are painful when they come in. Mm. And I think people forget that. And I think that we're so focused on, let's get them under anesthesia so we can just get them unblocked. And, you know, as with any critical patient, we got to assess so many different things. Anesthesia is not benign. Now, every animal that's painful should get analgesia, but anesthesia is a different thing. And that's, you know, what I'm really interested in. How do you treat this case? So it's a case-based podcast. We go through all kinds of things. We've talked about hit-by-car patients. We've talked about, you know, hemoabdomen patients, the block cat patients. How do you do TPLO pain management? All of it.
That's great. Wow. That's fantastic.
Wow. That's so cool. And you say you put those out every week?
No, you know, with COVID and the move and, you know, trying to be a homeschool to a third grader has thrown a wrench in it. So usually it's like every third week we get one out.
All right. Fantastic. Well, yeah, if anybody out there listening that haven't checked that out, definitely check that out. It's a great podcast. And a good friend of ours, Dave, Karen Roach, was one of her guests. And just super cool.
Hi, Karen.
Yeah, she was great.
She'll love we gave a shout out to her.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Speaking of case-based stuff, you posted, I think it was in the Anesthesia Nerds Facebook group not long ago, about a difficult case that you had that had a kind of an unexpected outcome where post-operatively the patient arrested. And obviously not getting into specifics, but you know, that's something that I think if you're in this field long enough, unfortunately, no matter how prepared you are or what have you, you're bound to experience something like that at some point. Would you take a minute or so and just kind of take us through, like, kind of with all of your experience, that it still can happen and how you kind of navigated your way through that a little bit?
Yeah. So I had a patient that basically came to me because the person said, I trust you. I want you to do the anesthesia. This is a much older dog. We have a tumor to take out. It's a risky surgery, but I want you to be the one to do the anesthesia because I don't want anything to happen to this pet.
Mm.
Right? So I'm not gonna lie, I was very nervous. I didn't want to do it. I think anytime someone says to you, I want you because I trust you or you're the best or any incarnation of that, I get really wary. But I feel like I don't want to let anyone down. And so I'm going to do my best for your pet. And I'm glad that people trust in me and I'm going to try my hardest in any circumstances. So the surgery went fairly well. We moved into the ICU for recovery. We were setting up a CRI for recovery, and within 15 minutes of moving into recovery, pulse ox dropped. Her just color was terrible. Brought her out, started CPR, and couldn't get her back. And I was devastated. I mean, I felt like this person had trusted me and specifically asked me to be the one responsible, and I couldn't deliver. I couldn't prevent that from happening. And I have to tell you, I took a couple of days where I was like, I don't know if I want to keep going with VetMed. Like, I don't want to have this feeling that I'm the one responsible and I can't fix it. And now what do I do? But it's true that if you are working in anesthesia and you're really doing a lot of anesthesia, you're going to experience death at some point. That's just statistics, because our patient mortality rate is 10 times higher than in human medicine because just the way, you know, what we know about patients, the way our patients are monitored, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's not to say that we didn't have all the bells and whistles on this patient. You know, we have the ART line going, we have CRIs going, we had, you know, CO2, all the stuff. But I still couldn't save her in recovery. And we know that in anesthesia, induction and recovery are the most dangerous times. So I knew this, and I knew going into it that the procedure itself was going to be risky. But this, you know, blind optimism that I try to have, that yes, everything's going to be great and we're going to do our best and the guiding forces are going to make sure that everything's fine. And when it doesn't work out, it's pretty rough. And so the hard part for me is I don't experience that a lot, and I don't want that to sound cocky at all, but in my 16 years of doing this, I've experienced 3 patient deaths, and I know all of their names now. Do you know what I mean? They will stick with me forever, and I'm not going to forget them, and I am going to make sure that I am more vigilant or you know, overanalyzing how can I do things. But it brought into this perspective for me that I can understand now, especially technicians who maybe don't have a good support system and experience this, how devastating it can be. I am really lucky in that not only did I have a great support system with my team at work, but also I have a great support system at home with my husband. He's also a veterinary technician, so he understands kind of the rigors of the job and what's going on. So when I came home that day devastated, he gave me the space, but then also allowed me to talk about it. And I'm thinking, for some people, if they don't have that support system, you know, if they cannot reach out to a friend or family member and they're feeling this way, I have to tell you that there was a point that afternoon that I said, I understand why people go to the dark place, because all I wanted was for the world to swallow me up and never see anything again, because I was so upset at the outcome.
Yeah. Wow. Especially, like you said, you know, support system in the workplace, you know, if that's the other side of the coin and you're blamed for something or what, I mean, I can only imagine how how that can go down a bad rabbit hole really quickly. Oh,
yeah.
Well, thank you for kind of taking us through that, because I know that's, again, something that if you do this long enough, even, you know, no matter how prepared you are or how well versed you are in some of these things, unfortunately, unexpected events happen. And but it's also important to know how to, you know, navigate, like you said, with support system at work, support system at home, and who you can talk to and where you can go when that kind of stuff happens. So,
and also just kind of reaching out to fellow technicians and being that support system. That should be something that should be innate in us to see that happen and to band together as a team, really, to kind of overcome that and kind of deal with it and talk your way through it.
Yeah. And ultimately, is there anything you can learn from it, right? You know, like, as you said, Tasha, you know, the names of those patients will stick with you forever. And there's probably something, you know, you take away from each of those things that, you know, maybe you keep in the back of your mind, or maybe you apply going forward or what have you. And it's you don't get to that point right away. But I think ultimately, in a lot of ways, we can. And
just another kind of, for me, I have to say that this is just my own personal experience, my own personal opinion. I think that it's really hard. It's not only hard to lose a patient, right, and feel like you've done something wrong, but especially if you're friends with an owner or you're friends with, you know, one of the things that I really, really don't love is when employees come to me, other employees come to me, and they say, my dog's getting spayed. I want you to do the anesthesia. I only trust you. I only want you.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm human, man.
Yeah.
I can't control every outcome. And so that part for me is like, how do you balance? Yes, I want to say yes to everything and I want to do all the things and keep everyone safe. But I'm not magic. I'm human like everyone else. And there are variables that I can't control. And it sucks sometimes. Like it just sucks. And I, like I said, I have a really good support system. I encourage anybody. And I think that I did that night, went on to the Not One More Vet support staff page. And I just said, hey, here's what's happening with me. And it's a really crap situation. And I feel horrible. And the support was amazing.
Yeah.
How would you deal with, I guess this comes from a personal standpoint where, my own dog needed cruciate surgery a number of years ago. And at the time, I said that I wanted to be the one to do the anesthesia. And not just out of a cocky standpoint, it wasn't a thing where I didn't trust anyone else. But she was an older dog. She was probably 11 or 12 at the time. And in my mind, I thought that if something went south, I didn't want to have anyone to blame but myself. What is your take on that? Would you do that with your own dog or your own pet?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would. But again, that's my personality. My personality is, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Am I a little bit of a control person? Yes. Like, I want to know. I want to feel like I can control all the variables, even though I know I really can't control all the variables. But yes. And that's why a lot of times when really critical cases come in and the owner, especially if it's someone I know, when they say to me, hey, my patient is, you know, my pet is a 14-year-old uncontrolled diabetic, you know, and it needs to have
there you go,
HCM, CKD, and hyperthyroid.
Exactly. And like, I didn't refill his enalapril, so try okay, right? And you're going to do anesthesia. And I don't want to say no, ever. Yeah. And I also don't want to put that on my teammates, right? Like, of course I want to say no, because I know this is going to be an anesthesia nightmare. But again, that's why I have the letters after my name. Like, that's what I signed up for, yo.
Yep.
So I'm not going to make my team members do that. And again, God forbid if something goes wrong, you don't want to take a newer technician and make them hate anesthesia, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I don't want to give any newer technicians a case that they are going to be like, this is horrible. You know, it's on, because anesthesia is not for everyone, right? Like, anesthesia is definitely like what they say, where it's hours and hours of boredom and then 30 seconds of, oh my God, everything is happening right now and it's a crisis.
Yeah.
Which I function very well in, but I know not everybody else does. So if it was my own pet, I definitely would do my own pet's anesthesia, because God forbid something went wrong. I wouldn't want anyone else feeling guilty about that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to ruin anesthesia for anyone.
Kind of just transitioning out, you know, we're kind of getting up to an hour here. In your opinion, What do you think is the biggest obstacle that veterinary technicians face in this field today? Not just anesthesia-wise, but overall.
I was going to say, well, anesthesia-wise, I mean,
you can have two answers.
I was going to say, I can tell you, anesthesia-wise, I think the biggest obstacle that a lot of technicians face that they tell me when I go to speak at conferences is that they come home with new information about anesthesia or pain management, and they have a older doctor mm-hmm. who does not want to change the Hydro Ace pre-med that they've been given and they give to every single patient no matter what.
Right.
So I think that, listen, anesthesia is scary and change in itself is scary too. So putting those two things together, I totally get it. If you have a system that's been working for you, but again, we're going to learn better and then do better. So I think, you know that we know that using an ISO box for cats that are upset or fractious is not the way to go, we should be doing better. Anytime we can make the experience better for our patients, we should be doing that. And sometimes you have to step out of your comfort zone a little bit and learn some new things. And I think that's probably the biggest obstacle, is that people get so comfortable with their routine. They've been doing it for 10 years this way. They've never had a problem, right? Air quotes. And they don't want to move forward.
Right.
That's anesthesia-wise where I see a problem. As far as technician-wise of an obstacle, quite frankly, it's pay. Mm-hmm. This is a big obstacle. Yeah. I went into Target yesterday. There is a sign on the door at Target saying team members starting at $16 an hour.
Mm. Wow.
I mean, how can we ask these technicians to go to school for 2 years, invest in this career, and be a highly skilled, highly educated team member, and then only pay them $12 an hour?
Yeah. Oof. I was going to say, new grads, most places aren't pulling that.
Yeah.
Oh. Right. So I think, you know, if we want to really make this career sustainable, and if we don't want to have so much turnover, right, we have to figure out a way to make those credentials really mean something and pay people accordingly.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. You know, one thing you said in there, we're going to wrap up, and the last question is always, is there anything we haven't covered yet that you want to get out? And it can be anything, you know, you can promote something or promote your podcast or your Facebook group or anything else that comes to mind. But one thing you said in there about boxing down cats, I know we talk often about block the box, so I'm going to throw that out there as what haven't we covered that I want to put out there is block the box. But is there anything else you know that you want to talk about before we wrap up that we haven't covered yet?
Oh my gosh, I don't think so. I mean, I've been yammering on for like an hour about anesthesia, and I mean, you know that I can talk for a long time about dexmedetomidine. So, like, if you want to talk about how awesome dexmedetomidine is, or why getting an anesthesia tattoo is the coolest idea ever, like, we can do a whole episode.
I got to ask what an anesthesia tattoo looks like. What?
Oh my gosh. I have dexmedetomidine's molecular structure tattooed, and then right next to it, I have a lot of floral tattoos, but they're all florals that are medicinal. So I have, opioids, I have a poppies.
Belladonna.
I have belladonna. I have the plant that was used to make the first muscle relaxers. And then I have, back in Roman times, they used to, now I'm like, forgetting the name of it now because I'm looking at my arm and trying to see all these different plants I have.
That is the nerdiest set of tattoos I think I've ever heard of.
And then I just recently got a Macintosh laryngoscope blade. And because I'm like definitely team Macintosh. I know some people are team Miller and that's totally fine, but I'm all the way team Macintosh.
I get them confused. Which is which?
Okay, so Miller is a longer, flat.
Miller's the longer, flatter one. Okay.
Yep, and Macintosh has the curve to it.
The
thing that I really like about the Macintosh blade, okay, we're getting real, real geeky right now.
It's all good.
The thing that I really love about the Macintosh blade, especially if you're intubating cats, is that it sits in the vanicula, which is kind of right before the larynx, and you kind of pull it down. And for me, for intubating cats, I love the curve of a Macintosh blade. I find it very much easier for me.
Gotcha.
Now, again, personal preference, but I'm team Macintosh all the way. So that was my latest tattoo.
I actually prefer the Macintosh as well because they make good bottle openers.
Yes, that's true as well.
Dave, take us away here. Wrap us up.
Man. Oh, man. All right, Tasha, before we wrap up, we always have our one last question. It's the Vet Tech Cafe Would You Rather question.
All right.
I think I found a good one for you. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
Okay. So in this scenario, you are given $1 million. And your would you rather is, would you rather be only able to buy stuff from the dollar store, or you can shop anywhere you want, but you have to pay for everything in pennies, and you are the one that has to count out each and every penny?
Oh, yeah, no. I'm the dollar store all
dollar
the way.
Store?
I mean, like, I'm already shopping at the dollar store because, again, I'm on a vet tech salary, and I just bought a house, so... Yeah, I was like, why am I going to pay that price for sponges? I'm going to the dollar store.
Yeah. And honestly, there's one right across the street. I've counted out pennies at the dollar store. I've done both.
That's great. That's fantastic. All right. I guess with your new house, you could go to Home Depot and spend hundreds of dollars in pennies.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't really want to think about the level of spending that we're going to do redoing this bathroom right now, but yeah, it's a little intense. But you know what? That's why I have gin in the house.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There you love it. I love it. We'll end there. Tasha, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe
and
sharing a cup of coffee and talking all things anesthesia and pain management and all these different credentials and pages and groups and everything, because it's so cool and so many people are so into it. I know they're going to love hearing it. So thank you so much for coming by and for taking some time out. And obviously, we don't get to see you at IVEX this year, but hopefully we get to run into you soon. And if you have a few minutes, the Sunday night of IVEX, you're welcome to come by our Zoom chat and hang out with some people for a few minutes if you're not doing anything. But otherwise, we hope to see you soon. And thanks for coming by.
Soon.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
I know. I miss everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, you guys. I love your podcast. And, you know, again, thanks for getting the word out there about just different avenues for veterinary technicians and just all the different things that we can do, because we are pretty badass.
Yeah,
we are.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everybody, have a good night. Thank you very much.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks.
We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. We often talk about difficult issues facing our profession and chat with colleagues who have strong opinions of those issues. As such, we feel it is important to note that the opinions and views expressed by us as the hosts or our guests on the Vet Tech Cafe podcast are solely theirs and theirs alone, and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity. If you have questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Lastly, as Dave said during the intro, please like us, follow us, and take a minute to rate and review the Vet Tech Cafe podcast on whatever podcast platform you use. It really does help. Thanks again for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe.